the wording charged and convicted, perhaps.
That's more clear.
That sounds good to me, thank you. Who was that?
Jan Brandt.
That was Jan and Carney.
Sorry, I didn't recognize your voice. Thank you.
Okay.
I have a comment while I'm chair.
Okay, I think I heard Nancy Kaufman and then Carlos.
I guess my comment would be that the dilemma there becomes that conviction can take anywhere up to years.
Right.
And how long are we going to wait for that to happen?
I was going to touch the same issue, and I think there is a difference between revocating license and maybe taking away the vending sign.
And I also have a concern about severity of the violation. You know, to me, you know, people may commit a misdemeanor, but you know, really are fairly decent citizens, you know. Whereas a felonious charge is more serious.
Okay, how specific do we need to be? I mean, I know that we before evidently weren't being specific enough when we just said that extended illness with medically documented diagnosis of prolonged incapacity of the vendor to operate the vending facility in a manner consistent with the needs of the location or other available locations in the vending facility program. Evidently that wasn't enough. I mean, it seemed like it was to me until we started talking about a bunch of these other things, and then it seemed like, well, maybe we do need to be that specific. Now I'm back to wondering, I think the comment about the there needs to be a time frame for unexcused absences, if I mean, there doesn't seem to be one of those, but
what if the rule gave some specifics as ways that, or reasons that a license can be terminated or suspended, but then also had a category or a subsection that said, or others as determined by the blind vendor committee and the state licensing agency, or, well, no, you don't want to open it up for anything, but somehow to leave it so that there's, if there are situations that don't exactly fit any of these, but where some kind of a decision needs to be made, that we have a way to make the decision. That's the key, is, you know,
could it be something like if a vendor is not able to operate the vending stand for a certain period of time, the, you know, committee would get together with the state licensing agency, like 30 days weren't able to operate their vending stand, or 14 days, or...
Well, like this, A3 doesn't have any definite time, and it also is confusing to me. Withdrawal of the vendor from the program with or without written notification of the state licensing agency. Exactly what does that mean? There's no time frame, or there's...
Right.
What does that exactly mean?
Well, that's a good question. yeah, it isn't clear enough.
You know, the two was as clear, at least to me, as that is.
I'm looking at a section in the regs, but it's about issuing licensing. I haven't found yet terminating licenses, unless there was something there you saw that I didn't, Bill. I want it to be about terminating licenses.
Now, it seems
evidence that the vendor does not meet one or more of the criteria under 003.01 and 02. Does that cover the rest of that stuff that you were just talking about?
May I read a section? I don't know if this is the only part, but this from the reg says, the state licensing agency shall provide for the issuance of licenses for an indefinite period, but subject to suspension or termination, if, after affording the vendor an opportunity for a full evidentiary hearing, the state licensing agency finds that the vending facility is not being operated in accordance with its rules and regulations, the terms and conditions of the permit, and the terms and conditions of the agreement with the vendor. Now, Bill, did you look further, or did you just stop? We'll let him continue to look to see if there's something else specific to, you know, that's more what the conditions would be. But that might be some language that would allow what we're talking about, so that we're neither given just free rein with people that could be subjective, but also our hands aren't tied. If there's a problem, we have a way to deal with it. So I'm asking what people think.
Pearl, this is Bob Burns. I have a substantive question. If a vendor has a sustained illness and is going to be sick, and the stand is going to be abandoned, how does the substitute process work? I mean, can a site be manned by the substitutes for a month?
Yes, this is Pearl. Definitely, it can be managed by another person, and it can even be for whatever length of time. I mean, if somebody has a transplant, they're not going to be back on their site at their facility in 30 days, but they would work together with the Blind Vendors Committee and the agency to make sure substitutes were in there. If they didn't have a substitute, we sometimes have put in an entity, you know, a person or another business to run the thing for a while until the problem was solved.
Well, if that's the case, then I would agree that on the criminal incarceration, that it should be a conviction, criminal incarceration, so that while that process is, and we're not talking about the appeal during the long period of time, the actual initial trial generally is going to happen in a somewhat manageable time period. If substitutes can be arranged for, then that would be, to me, is equal to a transplant. If someone is charged but not convicted, they work it out through substitutes.
And sometimes they put them on work release also, so.
Yes.
The question I have for the fighter, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Jim, please.
The question I have then for Bill and Bob, Bill, and whoever else might know the answer, if the individual then is without this crime, found guilty, and subsequently the conviction is overturned on appeal, would that individual get his stand back?
Sure, I don't know why not. You know, it would be, if there was a length of time in there, and you know, the person would need to meet with us again. And I mean, if it had been just a temporary substitute had been put in there, it could be that the facility would already be reassigned, but the person who had the seniority there would have the priority, I would think.
Pearl, this is Dorothy. You know I work with a lot of folks who are incarcerated, and frequently they go out and commit a crime, they're convicted, sent to jail, and then they're put on work release. How would we handle that?
Well, what I know about work release is that it's very much controlled and managed by corrections. And it's not just any job, any place. Now, that's not my area of knowledge, so I don't know. But if that were, I would think if the work release people were willing to supervise a position like a facility manager, then we could work with that.
I think we need to write it so the state licensing agency has some flexibility. Use your good judgment to make those decisions.
You say you're referring to the SLA?
Right.
If you make it too discretionary, though, you run into the whole rules process problem that you don't have any definite standards in here. Everything is just open-ended. I personally wouldn't want a convicted felon working in a stand for me, but that's my own popular list.
You know, another part of it is if a person was convicted and then they did their time, you know, and then they come back out, I would say they have as much a right to work in this program as any job in the society, you know. I mean, some jobs you have some real specifics about what the nature of those convictions were, but I don't want us to try to do something above and beyond what the jury and the judge and the corrections system has already done.
Qualifications of being a vendor to begin with.
They are. You have to be a... Pardon? You know, are you asking whether some of it addresses some of this, these issues?
Well, my point was the qualifications for being a vendor, you have to have some honesty and intelligence and some different things.
And right. And all of that is in the... Oh. Right.
And that stuff is in the previous section of this, in 003.02
yes.
And 3. And so those stipulations are already there, and that's why when it says that thing about if you don't meet the criteria, seems to me like that ought to speak to some of this, because if you're a felon, you're obviously not honest in some way or another, and if you're going away with an unexcused absence, then you're not being very responsible and all of that. And so I'm just not convinced yet necessarily that we need to be that detailed.
A comment in North Platte.
Okay.
If a vendor is not able to maintain his unit, then due to incarceration, he would not necessarily lose his license, but he would have to reapply for a unit if there isn't anybody to take care of it.
I don't know anything about the time frames for when that kind of stuff changes.
I'm kind of lost. It's a little too vague for me to quite address.
the comment had to do with the fact that if somebody is incarcerated and somebody else ended up taking over the unit, then that person would be, you know, maybe they wouldn't have lost their license, but they might have lost their unit.
Right, right.
But that person...
They'd have to reapply.
And they'd have to reapply. For a unit.
This is Bob Burns. Bob Burns, maybe bring this to a head. I think that incarceration due to criminal conviction is necessary. But then down where we sent, talking about unexplained absence, that if we could add unexcused also, and then have that, you know, to kind of get some of these gray areas, that the vending board or the, you know, maybe a combination with the director have the authority, you know, to excuse, you know, an absence, you know, they kind of get into some of these gray areas, and that, you know, that if that was added, to give them the ability to, you know, look at some of these individual circumstances and deal with them on a case-by-case basis rather than trying to formulate a rule that's going to cover every situation.
Yeah.
That's what I suggested earlier.
Yeah, well, in this number six that belongs somewhere else, does kind of, it talks about the Blind Vendors Committee may review inaccurate and late reports for possible suspension and or fines after a vendor has failed to comply with some of the other things that are there. It speaks, you know, that says specifically the A5, but it wouldn't have to.
I'd like to read to you the other, there's four more items that have to do with reasons for the revocation of a license. And I wonder if we think about all of it as a piece, maybe we can decide whether we just need to have a more broad thing with some specifics about medical condition, you know, some real short specific things that all would have to be conferred upon by the agency and the committee. So, if it's all right, let me read these others. Is that okay, Barbara?
Yes.
Okay. Failing, and these would be added to what's in there, which are the extended illness, the withdrawal, and like that. Okay. Failing to pay monies due from the operation of the facility, including but not limited to taxes, fees, assessments to a government entity or supplier, or knowingly giving false or deceptive information to, or failing to disclose required information to, or misleading in any manner a governmental entity, including the commission or a supplier. Failing to cooperate in a timely manner with audits conducted by the SLA or other state or federal agencies. Failing to maintain the required insurance coverage. Failing to properly maintain facility equipment in a clean and operable condition within the scope of the vendor's level of maintenance authorization, as indicated by three consecutive inspections of the SLA. The Committee of Blind Vendors will review each inspection of failed inspections after the second inspection and make the recommendation to the vendor and the SLA. I apologize. Obviously, whoever was writing was getting tired. But it seems to me like the best thing would be to make sure in this section we say that all of the specifics would be reviewed by a combination of the agency and the committee of vendors, and then we could have specific items dealing with medical illnesses, failure to cooperate with audits, failure to pay any monies due or to abide by any licenses or contracts. I'm just making this up, but, and something to do with legal standing. You know, I think the charged and convicted is probably good, and unexplained or unexcused absences. So it's kind of hits some broad topics within which we could look at to revoke or to suspend a license. And I've heard the word they'd have to reapply several times come up. And if the license is suspended, you really don't have to reapply. You'd need to meet with the committee and the agency and figure out where you would be, what facility you would operate. But it really wouldn't be the same as reapplying to be a vendor. So I just want to clarify that.
I'm in North Platte.
Okay.
That sounds like a good idea to simplify it in the rules and regs. If you need to get that detail, you could do it in the contract with the vendor.
Yes.
And do it in an addendum that could easily be changed by the committee or the vending committee or the vendors committee and get it out of the rules and regs.
Well, you know, because I, thank you for the comment, Del. I was thinking that A4 covers a lot. I mean, evidence that the vendor does not meet one or more of the criteria under the other two sections that talk about the criteria that need to be met in order to have a license. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those things would fit in that. And it definitely makes sense to me to have that kind of thing in possibly in a contract or something, but not in the rule itself. I'm all for that.
It's difficult to find the line between too broad and you know, nothing at all there.
Yes.
But this might do that.
But if we're leaving in those other things, the things that are required in order to have a license, you know, there are several of them that people need to
Madam Chairman.
And if we're going to leave that in there, you know, the O2 says the qualifications for training to be eligible for selection, training, and licensing as a vendor. An individual must give evidence of being or able to become, and then A is sufficiently intelligent to grasp the fundamentals of vending facility operation, B sufficiently careful about his or her appearance and manner as to be able to meet and interact with the public, C honest and careful in handling sums of money, D willing to work hard to advance in the vending facilities program, improve business and develop maximum vocational potential, E competent in maintaining business records and accounts, F able to control inventory, G able to work with other business persons including supervisors, jobbers, and others in the business community, H able to recognize and, where reasonably feasible, correct machine problems, I able to reflect favorably on the competence of blind persons in the eyes of the public by handling business and relations with the public in a competent manner, and then 3, preference to blind persons in need of employment, the state licensing agency in issuing licenses to operate vending facilities shall give preference to blind persons who are in need of employment. And so if you have all of that, and then you have that A1 that says evidence that something in there isn't being met, would that do it?
But I would think that would meet all the requirements.
Let me read again what is in the federal regulations and see if in our, if we can just put this in there. Okay, if after affording the event, the state licensing agency shall provide for the issuance of licenses for an indefinite period, but subject to suspension or termination, if after affording the vendor an opportunity for a full evidentiary hearing, the SLA finds that the vending facility is not being operated in accordance with its rules and regulations, the terms and conditions of the permit, and the terms and conditions of the agreement with the vendor.
Well, that seems to be parallel language anyway.
Right.
Madam Chair.
Roy, did you have a comment? I didn't mean to overlook you.
Yeah, this is Roy Hobley. I was wondering if it sounds to me like there either does exist or there could be implemented a system of reviewing those qualifications on some kind of basis that you require and insist that those qualifications are being kept and updated on an ongoing basis. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, and that's when we get back to the state licensing agency and the vendors committee.
Do they have such a system?
We do have such a system, and it does work for the most part. When we are faced with a situation that doesn't fit anything at present, we have been unable to know what to do with the situation.
It seems to me it might be difficult to write that in the budget.
Right. And maybe that...
Comment in North Platte. Yes. Sorry.
Okay. Were you done, Pearl?
It's
okay. Pearl, were you finished?
I don't know. I lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
Okay, North Platte.
All right. Isn't there a difference between rules and regulations and policies and procedures? Can't these things go to the committee who establishes policies and procedures for running a vending unit? And have them be the watchdogs of those policies and procedures? You have the rules and regulations. It's a rule you have to have a license. It's a rule you have to meet the qualifications to be a vendor. A lot of what you have beyond that could be addendums to a contract or agreement or policies and procedures through a committee.
This is Pearl. Yes, that is correct. Throughout this process, we've kind of wrestled with the issue of what all should be in the rule and what can be in a separate document that's policies. And I guess what we've really been advised about and we've tried to do is to have as much of what you really want to hold to be in the rule, because if it's just in policies, the person with the complaint can bring it to the hearing or to take it to civil court, and with the argument that it's not in rule, so you cannot make me do this. And generally what we've been told by, I think, Attorney General's office and other sources is they will win if that's their argument, that it's not in rule. They will win. And my goal is not that we win cases, but that we work to have things clear so that we don't have those things.
Comment in North Platte.
Okay.
Pearl, are there other state agencies that already have figured this out that we might model the what we want to put into rule in rule and what we want to put in policies and procedures in policies and procedures? Other states have many, many more vending facilities than we do in Nebraska, so I would think that a lot of these circumstances they may have come up across.
Yes. You're right, and actually one of the reasons that we're so late in getting this kind of language that we didn't have it all figured out ahead of time for you all to read and think about is that we became, you know, really dissatisfied with what we had and started looking at other states. The bulk of what I'm reading today comes from the Texas Commission for the Blind rule. Now, there's some problems with what they've done, but we've tried to really, you know, do it in a way that got rid of those problems. But we thought they had a lot of good you know, they kind of nailed down some things that we hadn't even addressed. So we tried to do that. If we need to really go further and do a more complete search of things and compare, we can sure do that too. You know, we could go ahead and set forth a rule that had perhaps maybe what we have in here with maybe one other thing about addressing unexplained or unexcused absences, which that could cover anything, you know. And then later, a year from now, after we have time to really research this, see about amending the rule. That would be an option. I'd like to have one item that allows for a little more open, you know, if there's a situation that we have not thought of, that can be, that it would be reviewed by the committee and the agency, excuse me, and that would be, could be, after deliberation, a reason for termination of the license.
Okay, so would anyone on the board have difficulty with having, having started that sentence, would that include or exclude this thing about physical illness and all of that was already there? Were you talking about the unexplained and unexcused absences being a replacement for that or in addition to that?
I was saying that maybe we should not have so much specific, but have something about illness, something about failure to comply with the, you know, obligations. I think that's already in there. And then something that kind of leaves that any situation where the facility is not being operated in accordance with the rules of the terms and conditions of the permit, that then the agency and the committee would jointly deliberate to determine what to do with that.
Okay, so if we left the extended illness with medically documented diagnosis in there to cover the illness thing, and if we put unexcused or unexplained absences, and then we did the, I don't know what to do with that, withdrawal of the vendor.
I think that's the same as unexcused absence.
Yeah, so that would replace that. Okay, so we'd get rid of that, and then we would put other
well, before you go to
other whatever. Well, we would have the evidence that the vendor does not meet one or more of the criteria.
Yes.
Under that, we would keep that one.
Right.
Yeah.
And then failure to submit the required monthly reports and that kind of thing, we'd keep that one.
Well, that's one of the basic requirements, I think.
Okay, so we wouldn't really need to have that either?
I'm thinking.
I think that's why we need it, because right here it states it more clearly than any other place.
Okay, and then after that one, we would have other, whatever the word would be, as determined by the state licensing agency in consultation?
In accordance with the terms and conditions of the permit and the terms and conditions of the agreement with the vendor.
Yeah. Does that work for everybody? We have about 20 minutes to go, folks.
So, I mean, obviously, in some situations, there's going to be some real odd situations that can't be dealt with on a normal basis. Is there a, is if they do not meet these requirements, is that black and white, or is there some place that there's still a case-by-case review?
Oh, there's always...
Extenuating circumstances.
I'm sorry. There's always a case-by-case review, always. And
now, does our rules... Oh, I'm sorry, Pearl.
That's okay. And actually, the last section that I want to read to you, some eventually, has to do with administrative actions, and they're just, you know, how to deal with unsatisfactory performance. This is a piece we've never had in there, and it allows for what you do before you just terminate the license. Written reprimand, probation, loss of facility, you know, and the procedure for implementing that. So this, it makes more sense to have some mechanism by which you work with the vendor to do whatever is needed. As it is now, it's just, you can get your license revoked, period.
Okay, so does anybody have, we probably ought to get to that real in short order. Does anybody have any problem with these reasons that we just talked about for revocation of a license? You know, including that last one that was other in accordance with the permit and the rules and regulations and the agreement entered into with the vendor.
No, I don't.
I would say no.
Okay, I've heard Bill and Bob, and I think I heard Dorothy.
No.
And was that you, Nichelle?
Yes, it was.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so now, now we need to get to the...
Okay.
And I assume that that also included that we took out that number six, the blind vendors committee may review inaccurate and late reports for possible suspension and or fines after a vendor has failed to comply with...
Somebody's mic is open.
Probably.
A comment from North Platte before you leave the subject.
Oh, okay.
Just one more. When you get to the, or maybe we've already been there, the responsibilities of the vendors committee, what is expected of that, the function of the vendors committee, to develop programs and policies. I think what we're talking about here could justly, by the rule that we're passing, deal with some of the problems we have in the spectrum. Because that's their function, according to the rule. End of comment.
Okay, thank you. I think that is a good segue into where we were going to go, because it doesn't delineate another reason for license revocation, but it does talk about what we're going to do so that we hopefully won't get to that point where somebody does lose their license, but so that we can administratively have in rule what will happen. So I don't know what, if anything, we want to do with that thing about the vendors committee reviewing inaccurate and late reports. That doesn't belong in the revocation.
Right. I think we need to keep it in rule, but we just need to have it in a different spot. And it would fit within the section that I'm about to read about.
Okay.
Okay, and I'm not going to worry what number it would be, but that one will be in there. Types of administrative actions. There are four types of administrative actions based upon unsatisfactory performance. Number one, written reprimand. Now, the language I have in front of me has a whole paragraph or more on each of these, but I think that we could have, you know, even just the written reprimand, you know, formal statement describing violations of applicable law or these rules. Two, probation. Probation means allowing a vendor to continue in business enterprises in an effort to blah, blah, it goes on. But anyway, it could just say probation. Three, loss of facility, the removal of a vendor from the facility for administrative reasons. And four, termination. That means cessation of the license issued to the vendor. And then all of those, well, I don't know. Anyway, procedure, the next kind of part after those four then is procedure for implementing administrative action. Upon receipt that indicates administrative action may be appropriate, the agency will notify the committee that such action is pending. The SLA will also make the following actions prior to a determination. And then it's notifying the vendor and a little procedure about that. I would definitely want to get rid of most of those words and just have a general, or I mean a kind of a summary statement for each piece of that. And then within the procedures of the agency and the committee is where we could have all the details of about what it means to be on probation and what it means to what's required of the written reprimand and that sort of thing.
Okay, so as I'm hearing it, the only thing that feels like it's missing is how the final determination is made.
Okay, and that would be deliberation between the Committee of Blind Vendors and the State Licensing Agency.
With or without the vendor?
Well, the I guess, I mean, part of the deliberation would be getting all the facts. Mm-hmm. So maybe I should read a little more of this. Let's see. I need somebody else to read this section for just a minute. So why don't I, let's see, is Bill's here. Will you read this section about procedures, and then you all can discuss that.
I'm reading 003-.04D, procedure for implementing administrative action. Upon receipt, upon receipt of information that indicates that administrative action may be appropriate, the SLA will notify the Committee of Blind Vendors that such action is pending. The SLA will also make the following actions prior to a determination as to taking administrative action. A, the SLA shall notify the vendor in writing of the allegations and reasons that administrative action is being considered, period. The notice shall be in the vendor's preferred format and will either be hand-delivered or read to the vendor, or it shall be delivered to the vendor's work or home address. B, the vendor shall have 5 business days to respond, either in person or in writing, to the notice. The response shall be made to the individual designated in the notice. After receiving the vendor's response, the SLA shall confer with the Committee of Blind Vendors to determine what administrative action, if any, is appropriate. If no response is timely received from the vendor, the SLA and the Committee of Blind Vendors shall decide what administrative action is to be taken without the vendor's response. I'm not sure where we go.
Okay, so I think that speaks to how that procedure would work. So, do you think we need to I'm wondering if we need to add that the other stuff that she was talking about or not.
Okay.
mean, we have the list of things that will cause a person to lose his or her license, and now we have the procedure for dealing with that. The part that we didn't have before was the thing about the steps that would happen between getting a license and losing one. The written reprimand, the probation, and it seems like there was a third one that I'm not thinking of before revocation, termination.
Suspension.